again. This is Mace Hara for the Medical Sales Guru Podcast, the podcast for medical sales professionals. It is my goal to help you to sell more effectively, so you could help more of your customers to help more of their patients. Today's podcast is about selling skills, and specifically the way that I have found in my 30 plus years experience. I keep saying 30 plus years, but you know, one day I'm going to say 40 plus years when it gets up to that. But in my 30 plus years experience, what I have found is that most medical sales professionals, if you want to call them professionals for those who are, they sell intuitively. I just wrote a blog about this. You can read the blog at www.medicalsalestraining.com. The title of it is Intuition Could Be Killing Your Medical Sales. And the reason I chose that title is because selling by intuition can indeed harm your sales. Why is that? Well, selling by intuition seems intuitive. I know it's not good to use the word in the definition, but we all have intuition. We all have a belief of the way that things should be done. Take, for example, when you started out in sales. It might have been medical sales, or maybe before medical sales, you sold some type of a product or service. And it was probably your belief or your thinking, your intuition, that told you how to sell it. And here's how most people sell intuitively. First of all, they need to get in front of the customer. And their intuition tells them that the way to get in front of the customer is to say, "Hi, I'm here to show you my new blank." Whatever it is. If you're in medical sales, you might say, "Hi, I'm here to show you my new CT scanner," or "I'm here to show you my new drug," or "I'm here to talk to you about my new drug," or "I'm here to show you my new vascular device." The reality is, we all know this if you've been following my sales training for any period of time, that that is a woefully weak and ineffective approach, because there is no customer in the world, there is no gatekeeper in the world that really cares about your new product. Why? Because every customer that you call on already has products and services that allows him or her to be able to run their practice. So you coming in there and saying, "Hey, I got a new product," they're thinking, "Well, good for you. Don't waste my time with it." So intuitive selling often leads salespeople to take the wrong approach in their territories. And let me give you an example. It's the same example I used in the article, but it's a great example because it goes to the world of aviation. Now, you probably know that the aviation world and the medical world, very, very similar in terms of the risks involved. We know that when you take certain risks, or as a salesperson, if you ignore certain risks or you ignore them as a pilot, very bad things can happen. But when you do things intuitively, you don't think about it, because just the definition of intuitive. Intuition is the ability to understand something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. So we go by our gut. We go with what our gut is telling us to do. And let me give you an example, as I said, from the aviation world. Intuition kills dozens of pilots every year. So if you're learning to fly a plane, some of you have never flown a plane, some of you have experienced this, but one of the first things that you learn is the yoke, you know, which is the wheel in the airplane, or the stick, if there's a stick. It's either a yoke or a stick that you're using to control the left and right, up and down movement of the airplane. One of the things you learn is that if you pull back on that stick, it raises the nose. If you push forward on the stick, it lowers the nose. So intuitively, if you want to go up, you pull back. If you want to go down, you push forward. So let's talk about going up. Let's say that you want the airplane to climb. If you just pull back on the stick without adding power, what's going to happen is you're going to bleed off airspeed. The airplane is going to start to slow down. And every airplane has a stalling speed. A stall in an airplane is when the wings are no longer developing lift. And as you can imagine, if a wing is not developing lift, then it's reacting to gravity. In other words, it's going to be falling down. So it's very, very important to maintain sufficient airspeed so that the airplane keeps flying. Let's talk about using intuition in an emergency, something which unfortunately does happen in aviation. There can be emergencies, just like there's an emergency when you're driving your car. But let me tell you what happens with a lot of pilots when they respond intuitively with the type of emergency called an engine failure. Let's say you're flying a single-engine airplane. If you lose your engine, you're no longer going to be able to maintain altitude. In other words, you're coming down. Now, the good news is that an airplane, a single-engine airplane, without an engine is usually a very good glider. It will glide for a sufficient distance. So a lot of airplanes, for example, will have a 9-to-1 or a 10-to-1 or even greater glide ratio. That means for every mile in the air, if you have a 10-to-1 glide ratio and you're a mile up, 5,000 feet, you will be able to glide 10 miles before you get down to the ground. But here's what happens. If you're not over an airport when the engine failure occurs, or let's say a common time this happens is an engine failure on takeoff. So you're climbing out and suddenly the engine quits. The number one thing that a pilot needs to do when he loses an engine is to maintain flying speed. So if you're climbing and you need to maintain flying speed, in other words, that nose is up, you need to push that stick forward to get that nose down to maintain flying speed. Now, if you are close to the ground, let's say that power failure occurs when you are at 100 feet, it is counterintuitive to push the nose of the airplane in the direction that you don't want to go. Let's say you've cleared the airport boundary. Now, suddenly, you're looking at streets, houses, commercial properties, someplace you don't want to go. But the only way to keep that airplane under control is to push that nose forward. It's counterintuitive. But here's what a lot of pilots do. When they see the ground rushing up at them in that emergency, intuitively, they pull back on the stick because they want to get away from the ground. What happens is the airplane stalls and it falls to the ground. It is not survivable, or I should say it's rarely survivable when an airplane falls to the ground. It is extremely survivable if you fly it to the ground under control, even if you're going to hit things on the way down. So intuition in this situation in aviation is a very, very bad thing. It kills people. So the question to you is, the question you should be thinking about, how do you keep this from happening? And there is only one way to keep intuition from taking over. The answer is training. Now, let's talk about medical sales, because you're probably not very interested in me talking about flying planes. If you want to learn about flying planes, you'll go to a flight school. You are here at the Medical Sales Guru podcast because you want to be able to sell more effectively, to be able to close more deals. Well, this is very, very important because, as I said, the vast majority of medical sales reps that I have met in over 30 years sell intuitively. Now, sometimes this is going to work for you. I mean, that's the problem with doing anything that's intuitive. It works some of the time. So if you're selling some things, let's say you're closing 10% of your sales calls. Realistically, with good training, with good technique, with good skills and strategies, you might be able to close 20% of those calls, but you're not going to know that because your intuition has been getting you through it all these years. And here's the other thing about intuition. It is your intuition that is telling you you don't need any additional training because you feel like you're good enough. You feel like you know what you need to know to go out there and sell effectively. I was the same way when I started out. Let me share with you how I learned that training would be beneficial. I was in a situation, it was a very rare situation, where one of the hospitals in my territory put the orthopedic business up for bid. All of the hip and knee business was going up for bid because the company and the sales rep who had the business for a long period of time was charging a much higher fee for their implants than any other company. So the hospital says, well, the heck with this. You know what we're going to do? Number one, we're going to put out a request for proposal, which they did. And out of six companies, five companies came in lower than the company they were using. So they decided to have a presentation, to get all these companies together and to give a presentation to all of the orthopedic surgeons about the different hip and knee systems, figuring that the reps will come in, they'll show the doctors that the systems are at least the same or their systems are better than what they're using, and they can choose to go to a lower priced system. Now, this is very rare that this happens in a hospital. And I mean, quite honestly, you know, there's a lot of changes in healthcare right now where economics have really become the drivers. So you're going to have value analysis committees. You're going to have implant committees that will oftentimes be driving the decisions to move to a different product because of economic reasons. But this is going back before that was a huge concern. So anyway, I'm all excited about this opportunity. I hadn't had a lot of success getting in to see the surgeons. I was relatively new in the territory. And I was able to get in to see maybe 20% of them. But the rest of them, they were happy with what they were using. They didn't want to talk to any other orthopedic sales reps. So I was closed out. But suddenly, I'm faced with this situation. Well, here's the way that I understood it was supposed to work. We were all going to meet. And one by one, we would go into a room and we would do our dog and pony show. We would talk about our implant systems. Now, I'm thinking to myself, there's going to be six of us. And intuitively, I'm thinking, well, I'll just go in there and do my regular sales presentation. I won't be able to ask that many questions because it's going to be a group of 10 surgeons, but I will just talk about the science. I loved, when I started in medical sales, I loved talking about the science because I had an academic background. I had a background in anatomy, pathology. I knew a lot about medicine, and I figure I'll just go in there and I will just dazzle them with what I know about medicine, and I'll shoehorn my implants in there somewhere. I'll be able to outsell any other sales rep. That's what my thinking was telling me intuitively. Just go out there, Mace, and do what you always do. And then I started to think for a second. I'm thinking, you know, there's going to be five other companies who are presenting their goods. How can I stand out? How can I differentiate myself? How can I be different? And the truth was, I really didn't know. Now, a lot of you, when you're going out there to sell and you're thinking about selling your product, you're thinking, how can I be different? And intuitively, what most sales reps do is they say, well, my product is different. And they'll look at different in terms of, well, I have this feature that brand X doesn't have. And if you're talking about orthopedic implants, well, we've got a really cool instrument. They don't have an instrument like this. This instrument makes the surgery very, very easy. Or some reps might pull up outcome studies, or they'll pull up studies that show how long an implant will last over the life of a patient. So these different things in the rep's mind differentiate them. But think about what differentiation means to your customer, especially in a situation where six sales reps are going to be presenting. So differentiation in a room full of surgeons really comes down to answering the question, do they sell differently? Do they sound differently? Do they look differently? Because if you're an orthopedic surgeon sitting through six sales presentations in a row, you're probably going to fall asleep, or you're going to at least be very, very miserable. You're probably not going to be listening to all the presentations. So I contacted a sales trainer who presented at my company at one of the company seminars previously. His name was Ned, and I really was impressed with him when I saw him because he talked about things that I never thought about. And that is something about good medical sales trainers. They talk about things that you don't think about. They're talking about things that are not intuitive, and that's what makes the difference. So I went to Ned, and the first question that Ned asked me when we sat down was, he said, so Mace, let me ask you a question. What is your battle plan? And I already knew, so I'm really proud. I'm thinking, okay, Ned's just going to confirm what I already decided. So I told him I'm going to go in and show the surgeons how the science behind our implants makes it a superior system. I'll discuss the nuances that my competitors don't have with their products or they're incapable of discussing because I'm really good. You know, I have all this healthcare background and I could talk about things that my competition just can't talk about. My intuition was telling me that science was important to the surgeons. You know, so many reps believe that what's important to the surgeons is all of those cool features that are in the brochure. Now, Ned's next question made me rethink that. He said, so Mace, let me ask you, how successful have you been up until now selling science to these surgeons? I mean, has it been getting you in the door? Well, I'm thinking to myself, it hasn't been getting me in the door because I don't talk science with the receptionist in the office. But, you know, when I get in front of them, most of the doctors, they acknowledge the science. They go, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. But none of them have been jumping up and down and saying, you know, man, your science is so cool. I'm switching to your product. I mean, up until this point, that just didn't happen. And truthfully, it was because of the way I was presenting it and really not positioning it properly. I didn't know it then. Of course, I know it now. But Ned asked the question. He said, so Mace, selling the science, that really hasn't moved the surgeons to use your system, has it? Of course, I had to say no. So Ned offered some advice, which I really needed to hear. He said, Mace, let's really take a look at what you're going to be doing. If six sales reps are giving a sales pitch to a group of surgeons within a few hours, you better sound different. In fact, you better sound way different than any of your competitors. He asked a question which was kind of hard to answer. I guessed at it, though, and I was hoping it was a good guess. He said, Mace, what do these surgeons really want? I thought for a second, then I answered, you know what they really want? They want the hospital to leave them alone and allow them to use whatever system they want to use. So Ned summed it up. He said, Mace, you know, if that's what the surgeons are thinking and you're in the room, you need to discuss what they're thinking. Not what you want to talk about. You need to discuss what they're thinking about, because when you do that, you're going to get their attention. And at the very least, you're going to differentiate yourself from all those other sales reps in the room. So what Ned and I did, we discussed several strategies that he suggested about how I could discuss my products or discuss situations based on what was happening in the room. And then he had me practice exactly what I would say in different situations, keeping my focus on the long-term outcomes and not just this particular event, because Ned raised an important point, again, which isn't always intuitive for medical sales representatives. When you call on one of your customers, assuming you have the same set of customers, they're in your territory, and you're going to be calling on them multiple times, anytime you engage them, you are not just engaging them for whatever product or service you are trying to sell at that moment. You are engaging them for the long term. You are engaging them to be able to sell them something down the road. And it is also very likely that whatever you're selling, it is not going to be a one sale close. You're going to have to see them multiple times. So I had a whole different mindset based on training than had I gone by intuition. So let me tell you what happened. So I arrive at this hospital meeting. It's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. All the sales reps are in attendance, and then the chairperson of the committee, this implant selection committee, he shocked the heck out of us because he said, you're all going to be presenting in the room. You're all going to be in the same room. Which meant we're going to get to hear each other's sales presentations. Now, I don't know about you. I was never very fond of hearing one competitor, let alone five competitors, hear what I say to a surgeon. But that's the way it was. Some of the reps protested and said, well, you know, we'd really like to do this privately when we're doing this. And he said, oh, listen, you don't have to present in front of your competition if you don't want to. You can leave. You could withdraw from this proposal. You don't have to take part. So it was very, very uncomfortable. Our hands were forced. And then what made it worse was we drew numbers from a hat for the presentation order. Guess what number I drew? Out of six slots, I was number six. I was dead last. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is going to be great. These doctors are going to be listening to, you know, I don't know how long it was going to take, a couple of hours of presentations. And then I get to go. They're going to be so tired out that they're not even going to listen to me. Well, the two-hour horror show began, and it was a horror show. Half the reps had full-blown PowerPoint presentations. They're putting up the slides. And they're the kind of people who don't know how to use PowerPoint. You know, there's 20 bullet points on each slide. And for the first one or two, maybe three presentations, the doctors are paying attention. But every rep who comes up there is using the same term. You're saying, well, doctor, you know, our implants, they're the state-of-the-art. They provide the best outcomes. Our instrumentation is state-of-the-art. It is the easiest to use. They all sounded alike. And for the first couple of presentations, the surgeons asked some questions. They seemed to pay attention. But by the fourth, you could tell these guys are worn out. They're staring at their watches. They're tapping their feet. They're tapping on the armrests of the chairs. They just wanted to leave. So finally, it was my turn. And I'm looking at these doctors in the room, and I'm thinking, man, I got to be different. You know, whatever I thought I was going to do intuitively, that's not going to work. I got to take Ned's advice. I got to go to the training, what we talked about, and do something different. So I started out by saying, doctors, thank you for being here. You've just endured over 90 minutes of presentations that I'm willing to bet have not changed your thinking about the system you want to use, nor should it. And suddenly I saw the eyes on these surgeons open up because I called it the way that they were thinking. They're all thinking, hey, you know, the hospital's forcing us to listen to these presentations. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I continued by making a point that supported what the doctors were thinking. I said, you know what? You're the surgeon. You're the one that has the knowledge, skills, and experience to make these decisions, not the hospital. Now, I look over at the chairman of the committee. He's given me the evil eye. I mean, he's really given me a nasty look, like, what are you doing? I didn't care at that point because back then, the period of time I'm talking about, the surgeon really had control of what they were going to use. It wasn't the situation today where the surgeon's power to choose a particular product has been diminished tremendously. But it doesn't matter because, again, you still have to be able to consider what your customers or prospects are thinking and to be able to engage them accordingly. This is not intuitive. So I continue talking to the surgeons after I got their attention by telling them that they should be able to use whatever they want to use. I decided not to do the presentation that I had planned. And I said, listen, I could waste your time by talking about my system, but the truth is, if I do that, I'm not going to insult your intelligence. You know, it's not going to change what you're going to do. So if you like what you've heard about one of the systems presented here today, then go ahead and vote. But if you'd like to know how some of your colleagues are overcoming many of the key intraoperative challenges that you face and how this is enabling them to also attract patients from other surgeons' practices, including maybe yours, let me visit with you for 15 minutes in your office this week. I can't tell you which system is best for your patients. I was the only rep to say that. I was the only rep to say, I can't tell you, I cannot tell you which system is best for your patients. I was the only rep who said that, which is the truth. A sales rep can't tell a doctor what's best. A sales rep can't tell a doctor what to do. But then I said, and the hospital shouldn't try to tell you which system is best either. But what I can do is provide verifiable data that will support your decision, whatever it is. Are you all good with that? The surgeons started to applaud. Now I was feeling pretty good about that. Realistically, the applause was probably more for ending their suffering by being short than it was for turning them on about seeing my products. But in the coming days, as I spoke to them, as I called on them in their offices, several acknowledged me for saying what they were thinking at that meeting because I was the only sales representative who told it like it was. Now, you're probably wondering, did I win the business? Because ultimately, that's what matters, right? Well, sadly, the answer for that presentation, the answer is no. The company and the sales rep who had almost all the business to start with, they got to retain it, albeit at a much lower price. But what happened? What did I get out of this counterintuitive sales presentation, really a non-presentation? Well, what I got was respect and open doors, where I had difficulty getting into 80% of the surgeon's offices in this territory, I was now able to get into 90% because, number one, they knew me. They knew that I wouldn't waste their time, and they knew that I would not bore the crap out of them like every other sales rep who came into their office and droned on endlessly about their products when those sales reps are selling intuitively. You see, that's what happens. When you sell intuitively, you are selling and sounding like every other sales rep who gets in front of your customers. And again, what is your goal as a medical sales professional? Your goal is to be able to differentiate your products, your services, your company, and yourself so that the customer preferentially wants to do business with you. And the way to do that is not by sounding exactly like your competition. Even though you're saying different things, even though you're showing different features and benefits, if you are going to present the same, you're going to sound the same. And the customer, in the vast majority of the times, is going to say, they're no different. I'm going to stay with what I'm doing. The way that most sales reps continue to sound the same is by selling intuitively. So how do you break that chain? There's only one way, my friends. It is through medical sales training, training with someone, training in a program which is going to make a dramatic difference. Now, this might sound very self-serving because you know that's what I do. I'm a medical sales trainer. I'm an expert who speaks about medical sales. But the reality is, the reason that I got into this business, the reason I do what I do, is because I know the huge impact that it can have. Now, another thing about intuition. Intuition often tells many reps, well, if this is such a good thing, then I'm going to let my company pay for it. In other words, your intuition is not telling you to invest in your own success. That is a very, very dangerous, intuitive way of thinking. Ultimately, your company is going to evaluate you based on your performance. They're not going to look at that performance in terms of whether or not they have invested in your success. They're giving you a product to sell. And while they do provide product training, and your company may even provide sales training, ultimately, it's up to you to be able to make the connection with your customer and follow a process, do what needs to be done in order to sell your product. It's up to you. Professionals invest in their own success. Remember those pilots I was telling you about? In the aviation world, it's a rule that pilots must undergo recurrent training on a regular basis. If you are an airline captain flying a jet or even a commuter plane, doesn't matter what it is or how it's powered, if you are flying professionally, you are required to undergo recurrent training every 6 months. If you're the co-pilot, it's every year. They put you in a simulator. They throw every emergency at you to make sure you know how to handle it. And the reason they do that is because they understand human nature. Human beings develop bad habits over time, and they revert to doing things intuitively. And in aviation, that is a deadly thing. Ladies and gentlemen, in medical sales, that is a deadly thing from the perspective of burning through valuable sales prospects. The takeaway message is that if you're not closing as many deals as you would like to or need to, you need to get additional training from wherever it comes. If I could help you with that, please give me a call at 561-333-8080 or visit my website, medicalsalestraining.com. For the Medical Sales Guru Podcast, this has been Mace Haroff, and let me leave you with the words that I always do, that no matter what you do in your medical sales career, don't forget that nothing is ever more important than the patient. Ladies and gentlemen, the patient always comes first. Sell effectively, sell more, so you can make a difference. I'll talk to you soon.